Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. We are going to get into the state enabling acts. Remember, we kind of have a curriculum. One of the things I have not covered is the Tory Acts, at least in a while. And the Tory Acts, the bomb, or I should say the hammer, really started coming down January 2nd, 1776, when Continental Congress basically started recognizing that they had a problem with British loyalists within their ranks, and that they had to kind of, you know, do some damage control. But the Tory Acts, and that's the one I read, but the Tory Acts, because there were things that piled onto that afterwards, or I should say Continental Congress kind of supplemented or added to and modified their position regarding loyalists to after the war, once the Revolutionary War was over, almost 100,000 loyalists were kicked out. And we, you know, we're only looking at just how many million? Three, maybe? 3 million, I think, at the time after the Revolutionary War we had in citizenship. So that's actually a pretty large percentage, right? I mean, if you kind of do the math, it's about 3.5%, almost 5%, somewhere there. Anyway, and you got to understand, I think the part of the census at that point was still counting slaves. But Nevertheless, the fact is that they took their loyalty to liberty very seriously. And we have been, well, I'll just say it, somebody's been pissing in the pool, because over time, our genes have become far more tolerant, or I should say our ancestry, you know, where we came from, and having such a staunch, stubborn attitude towards liberty that we become, I think, complacent in thinking that, well, it's okay to have, you know, to for an enemy to be among us because they just have a different view. No, it wasn't okay, and it can't be okay. You cannot have an enemy of your household living within your household. You can't. We have a Bolshevik revolution going on. People that are willing to die to destroy our Constitution and our liberties. Do you understand that? We have people, and some of them may be your family members. Some of them may be old acquaintances, school friends, that, wow, you know, I can't believe we've divided so far. And if you think about it, over the course of the last 50 years, that's exactly what's been happening. That is exactly what has been happening as we have moved forward in, as a culture, society, and nation, in basically being indoctrinated onto a godless and being forced by an antichrist government to actually become a godless secular nation. This is how people start embracing things that are absolutely contrary to Christ's teachings, to the salvation of mankind. We have to be a liberal society. We have to use liberty, or everybody has to be able to choose for themselves what they're going to do and what they're not going to do. Now, I find it interesting that when we talk to conservatives kind of are, you know, liberal, or one would think that they are, but a lot of them really aren't, because they don't understand that, you know, just because we may have some nuances, like we agree on 90%, but that other 10%, it's worthy of splitting, creating chasms, and we can't unite. Are you kidding me? We have to understand that the one thing that we all share is this love and understanding that the Constitution is the greatest governing document ever created in the annals of mankind. Period. Period. So we have to start understanding the importance of putting aside are, and I call them fringe issues. I guess there's better ways of using that, but it's an edge issue. It's a myopic issue when somebody looks at the Second Amendment and says, that's it, you know, and I become, you know, a contributor. I donate, you know, on an audit, you know, I create an automatic allotment, or I send money on a monthly basis to where I pay an organization to protect my Second Amendment rights. I'm telling you, friends, that money, and if that organization moved away from just being an edge or a myopic organization and took a stand on defending the entire Constitution and every other organization, such as abortion, vax freedom, all of these groups that are standing up now and that have been around for years, if everybody took a step back and all basically decided we're going to demand full compliance of the Constitution, because now we have everybody. Now we have a much larger force. We have all the resources tucked into one thing, and that one thing would be demanding full compliance of the Constitution. And the only process of getting that there, getting the federal government back into the bottle, getting compliance, full compliance to the Constitution, is republic review, period. Now, republic review may be a different word because interposition is what Madison and Jefferson called it. But that was only half or a portion of what needed to happen. The interposition is, you know, when the states communicate to the federal government that you must comply and or suffer the consequences. And at that point in time, they didn't even have the suffer the consequences really in their arms or in their hands as a real tool, because they didn't have the 14th Amendment in 1798. We have it today. We have Section 3 of the 14th Amendment, and this is where we have the, I'll just say, the whammy. I mean, it is the whammy that we can throw onto our, you know, those public servants, our public servants who are not willing to support the Constitution. We can actually have them removed. We just have to enforce it. And so these are little things that we're doing. And so just so you know, I'm actually going to be presenting for a very short period of time my premise on making all elections local and complying to a Republican form of government election-wise. Because, and I'll get into that. I probably won't get into that today, because what we want to do is get into the Enabling Acts. Because as they started, you know, operating this Constitution, and we've kind of already gotten into a lot of other content and details. And, oh, by the way, Will Christensen, thank you so much for coming on. I'm really thankful to start realizing that there are other party institutions out there that fully embrace the Constitution. Now, my preference, which is, you know, it's just a preference. It's not a bias. It's a preference. Because I'll get behind any party that gets to the top of that mountain. Now, I know that I seem to be harsh, and I don't mean to be. I maybe lack that the bowels of compassion and love like our Savior. I spent too many years in the Marine Corps to be able to, you know, feel, you know, that type of, I'll just say, grace towards others. And so it's not that I don't love others, and it's not that I don't appreciate and even empathize, understand, what have you. It's really more of, I guess it's just how you kind of have been raised. You create this personality, or this personality gets, you know, formed over the years. And I'm sorry, for 20 years of the Marine Corps, it kind of hardened me, and it doesn't mean that, you know, I'm as hard as I was as I was in the Marine Corps, but I do know this: tough love works. It does work. Going through the Marine Corps, I know the tough love works, because when those drill instructors were beating my butt, and, you know, because I went through when they actually laid hands upon you. I mean, they did the healing with the laying on of hands, healing your thoughts and healing your stupidity, because that's, you know, what they did. And I, you know, I'm not one of those people that want to become a victim and say, oh, they beat me or they hurt me. Now, I know that there have been times where things have, you know, people have died because of, you know, a bad actor or because of a mistake or an accident happens in that process. But bottom line, the tougher the love, the better you are. So I'm going down a rat hole. What I really want to do is I want to focus on, like I said, the enabling acts and getting back onto the curriculum. So we haven't covered the Tory acts. And so we will get into the Tory acts. We've covered the ratification base. We've covered the assumption acts. We've covered the cod fishery bounties. We've covered Madison's essay on property and the Whiskey Rebellion. We have not covered the 11th Amendment either. So that's going to be next in our curriculum. But what we want to do right now, because before the 11th Amendment, they actually started letting states into the Union. And so as we open this door in looking at enabling acts, what we're going to do is we're going to actually read what the Constitution says regarding allowing states in the Union. And then I'm going to read from the annotated Constitution. Actually, I'll do that last, because what we're going to do is we're going to start reading, and I've got six states that have been added to the Union prior to Missouri. Now, I had Missouri in a document, and this is one of the things I find interesting. Either somebody is listening because they're starting to hide documents. There was an organization that had the full Missouri Compromise in text out there, and I can't find it anymore. So I'm beginning to, every time I do research, I'm actually making a copy for myself from now on. Because you'd think that everything that lives on the internet is, you know, forever. No. There are people that are starting to hide key pieces of information and documents that we need. And with that, we'll be right back after these two promos. So please stay tuned. Thank you so much. Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416.
Okay, so let me kind of get back to the curriculum or the things that I want to cover, because, you know, as I start dealing with people, you know, directly, as I join a new group or what have you, and when they start talking, it's just like what we're doing with Rumble. And tomorrow I will be on Liberty, Not Tyranny, again on Rumble. And I think that's 2 o'clock East Coast time, and it would be 11 o'clock West Coast time. So if you want to listen to the questions that they're asking, because they actually get listeners to, you know, send in their questions and so forth, and they kind of ask these questions. I would do the same thing. I have a comment line. Anybody can call me, 425-270-5416. Now, one of the things that I'm guilty of, and I apologize, when you read my correspondence may be cold. It may be, you know, very forthright. It may be, or, you know, in your face. But it's not, I try not to use harsh words, but sometimes I use levity and people kind of miss that. You know, like I'll, you know, hey, this is kind of like opinions, dot, dot, dot. Everybody's got one, right? Anyway, I have to apologize because I know not everybody else has been hardened and hasn't served in the military. And that's one of the things I truly appreciate, because I get feedback from people that tell me all the time that I'm that way. And I try to be, you know, a little more cognizant of that. It's really hard to change your personality. As a matter of fact, there are things that everybody gets triggered. Everybody has a point where they snap, right? And so, what I mean by that is I don't mean snap, go crazy, that all of a sudden, you know, okay, that's it. Boom, right? Like with your kids. And with me, when it came to my kids, I'll just say this, and this is, I think, one of the most important things I learned from Dr. Dreykus, So You Want to Raise a Child. It was a really good book. It was long before Spock and that rest of that crap. And it was really basically, you know, it helps you attune yourself to, you know, you have this beautiful baby that's going to grow into a manipulator, because kids learn how to manipulate. They learn that from you. And so how not to, and how to address that, because that's it's an immature mind that tries to play manipulation. And so there's ways of dealing with that. And one of those ways is not providing a range in response. When you say no, and they can't do something, and there's a consequence to that, and they do it, you can't just say, no, I told you not to do that. And then you don't reemphasize yourself 10 times. You lay the groundwork. You say, you do not touch that. And when they touch that, there's a consequence that comes with that. And so you have to be true to your word, because then when you're true to your word, your child starts understanding that, oh, okay, well, you know, there's no range here. I can't wait till I hear a tone in their voice to where, okay, if I don't behave, there's going to be a consequence. You give them that, and they will take you to that level every time. But if you do it calculated and just say no, and if you touch that, this is what's going to happen, and you deliver the consequence. And you don't have to be mean. You don't have to be harsh or cruel. The fact of the matter is, and that's kind of how I was brought up. I mean, that's how the Marine Corps is. And that's why I just kind of adapted really easily into the Marine Corps compared to other people that was, you know, I don't like authority. You know, you have to have authority. There has to be a chain of command. There has to be, you know, some type of organization. But it can't be autocratic, and it can't be, at least if it is going to be cutting edge, if it is going to be truly evolutionary, then it has to be, you know, constant improvement, continual improvement, you know, Deming, those types of things, Six Sigma, whatever you want to call it. But anyhow, so as we go through, we're going to go through the Manifest Destiny, just trying to wrap up the curriculum here. The 12th Amendment, we want to go through that again. Even though we covered it on Constitution Day, we haven't gone through the vetoes of the Department of Transportation, so we'll get to that. We're going to get to Madison's letter to John G. Jackson. We'll hopefully fly through some of these things all this week or within the next couple of weeks, because as we get to Thanksgiving, this is the annual thing. I will read the proclamation for Thanksgiving on Wednesday, the day before Thanksgiving. And I give this to you, that I ask you to start creating a family tradition that is based on the tone that George Washington and our Constitution and those who are in service at that time, start doing that. And the thanksgiving that we should be doing is a service to Him, to Christ, to our benefactor who has blessed us and given us this Constitution and gave our forefathers the tranquility and the peace to allow them to actually pull up their britches and actually work out a government that would actually serve us for, and I'll just say it, for thousands of years. We have that good of a government. The Constitution can actually get us through, but we have to get Republic Review, and then we have to get the states empowered to start working together. But anyway, what we want to do, and one of the things I want to do also, I've never done this, but I want to go through the establishment of the Department of Home, which is the Department of Interior. Why? Because this was the first executive office that was created that was unconstitutional. It was 1849, if I remember, 49, 53, somewhere in there. We also want to cover the 14th Amendment, if we can. And we also have the Bill of Rights. We've covered that already, but that comes up in December. And usually during that time frame, we're still covering a lot of other little things, marketing and so forth. But we also have the Christmas special that I always do every year to kind of give you an idea of how they have been playing these tests and development in how to manipulate people. And so our Christmas that we know today, the traditions and everything else, is an amalgamation of a lot of different cultures and societies, but it was all done in a form of manipulation. And I say this, and we'll get into this, but if you want to do some research, just do this, because when you understand Christian or religious holidays, at least in the Western society has always married this concept of song with the what we're commemorating, whether that be the Passover or what have you, correct? And so when we start looking at Christmas hymns, Christmas songs, go look, do the historical research on it, and you will find that the majority of all the hymns we have all of a sudden started popping up in the mid to, the 1800s, mid-1800s. Why? Why didn't they have Christmas carols? Because England was about song. They were a pretty refined and developed culture. And if you look at Italy and so forth, there were songs that talked or celebrated the birth of Christ, but they weren't Christmas because they weren't the winter holiday Christmas songs like Snowman and so forth. Anyway, Frosty the Snowman or Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. Anyway, let's move on. So what we want to do and what I'll probably end up doing is I'm going to start broadcasting the ratification debates. And what I may do is if we've got the time to cover it between now, because we don't, it's 2 months, to cover the ratification debates. So if we have the time to cover both marketing and the rest of this content, we'll probably start airing the ratification debates again right after the beginning of the year. And I say that because, one, it's easy for me to do to just sit down and read the ratification debates and kind of plug away for 2 whole months. And it gives me an opportunity to actually get engaged in the upcoming 2022 election. Now, what I'm going to also do is I'll probably cover some of this stuff that we're actually wanting to do. So between now and the end of the year and the Tory Acts, once we hit the Tory Acts, and then I'll kind of go into the ratification debates. I'll just jump into those. But here you go. This is the important part. We'll probably get more involved in talking about First Amendment petitions with you because we've got two now. I actually have two. The second one is not up on the website yet because it's still kind of rough. I'm waiting to hear back from somebody, a couple of people. And so once I get their feedback and they go, oh, wow, yeah, because I probably need to sit down and read it again. There's probably things I can catch than clean it up. But I would rather actually get the feedback first before I do that. But what we want to do, because one of the things I can't do, because it's really hard for me to take the time to sit down and look up pornography, indecency, and those types of things. But if you haven't seen the curriculum that is being ran by the Planned Parenthood that is going into every state, every educational school board that is the government school system, right? If you haven't seen this, you need to take a look at this material because it's pornographic. And what they're teaching your children is unconscionable. If you would have done this a long, long time ago, you probably would have, you know, been slapped around. Or it, nowadays, it's against the law. So I need you to look up what your law statutes are. Anybody, the first person that can give me the law statutes of pornography, indecency, you know, what the laws and codes are, I will help you write a petition for your school board. I am currently working on a petition for your sheriff in demanding, one, our Republican form of government recognize our First Amendment petitions, and anybody that shuts down a First Amendment petition is violating your civil rights and should be charged with such a charge, which means it's a pretty good penalty. Anyway, we'll be right back after this.
If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer attention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me. AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and the 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADD-LOCAL or visit them on the web at www.addlocal.com.
To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath even though we're not required to take it because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
Don't forget, you can call our 24-hour comment line to ask a question or to speak on any topic. Dial 425-270-5416.
Okay, so let me just say it one more time for those of you that just tuned in. I will be speaking on Sunday. It'll be a short little presentation I'm going to be giving regarding the importance of a campaign that is really pushing, because we need to take a broad look at what our rights are, and we need as a people to start demanding a bill of rights, or ensuring that we still have legitimate bills of rights and our rights in this country that match to the 21st century. Because clearly they didn't have the internet, they didn't have the technology, they didn't have the ability for government and corporations to work together to spy on you. And so those types of things would clearly be unconstitutional in the paradigm of our Constitution and the framers. And so what we need to do is kind of do that, but I'm presenting that this coming Sunday at Red Pill Expo. So if you've not got your streaming, and I'm going to tell you, when you look at the people that are going to be speaking, some of these people are foremost experts regarding what's going on with COVID, you know, the election forensics and so forth. So you want to be able to, you know, stream this stuff and capture this. If you don't know how to capture, go and get, at least on the audio side, right? Go and get yourself a free version of Nero Wave Editor. It is an audio, it's how you can record things with, you know, with an audio application. You don't get the video, it's just the audio. And so what you can do is you can record, you know, the, at least what they're saying, and you can actually create a audio file for each of these individuals that will be speaking so that you can kind of listen to, because you may not be able to sit there the whole weekend and, you know, capture everything. But if you do, if you break it down by speaker, if you can at least pay enough attention to when that speaker is going to be, you know, stop talking and the next one's going to come up, so that you have, you know, two or, and one nice thing about Nero is you can run multiple instances. In other words, you can have three run. And you can actually start all three and use one for the first speaker, the second one for the second speaker, and the third one for the third speaker. And you just cut out the first two speakers in the third one, the first and the last speaker in the second one, and the second and third one in the first one, if that makes sense. Because that way, now you can segment all of these audio or all these speeches in your own audio file, in your own MP3 file, so that you now have a little library of very good information. But if you become a streamer, if you pay to go with the online streaming, then you will actually get that the outline for when the people will be speaking. So you can say, oh, I definitely want to get that. I definitely want to get this. And then you can start sharing this. You know, that's how you all of a sudden become a leader in your community. Say, hey, I recorded these things, and I'd like to actually have everybody come over. We can listen, kind of like watching a movie, but everybody just kind of sits and listens. Or you can share it. Everybody listen to it. You know, everybody promised to listen to it. And then you can get together and talk about the information that was provided. And you go, oh, wow. You know, we need to understand this more, and we need to either, you know, talk to that person, get, you know, more material, get their book, what have you. This is how we start getting educated and getting involved. There's all sorts of ways to do it, and that's how you can just start at your community level. But what we want to help you with is starting at your county level, actually start at a higher level in getting involved. Anyway, let's get to the Constitution on the enabling powers, or the powers that have been delegated to the federal government regarding the admissions of new states. New states may be admitted by the Congress into this union. End of clause. That's it. But no new state shall be formed or erected within the jurisdiction of another state, nor any state be formed by the junction of two or more states without the consent of the legislatures of the states concerned, as well as the Congress. And so, in other words, there has to be, if you are, now, so let's be clear here. The new states may be admitted by the Congress into this union. End of clause. Which means that Hong Kong can be admitted by Congress without any state legislature. Congress can actually say, we are now creating a territory out of Congress. This is why they have territories in Guam, Virgin Islands, blah, blah, blah. And so what we have in this Constitution is that Congress does have the power to admit states in the Union. But what we have to pay attention to is what are the restrictions in some of the states, or what Congress can do in forming the states. Does Congress have any power to take away the sovereignty of one state so it comes into the union not at an equal level? Okay, just to be clear here. But no new state shall be formed or erected with the jurisdiction of another state, nor any state be formed by the junction of two or more states without the consent of the legislatures of the states concerned, as well as of the Congress. So in other words, if they're going to do any type of state that is going to be adjoining a state, or is going to be coming out like the splitting of the state of Washington, which would be awesome, which would be great. And if we were able to do that, we would need the state legislature of Washington State to actually approve that, as well as the state of Idaho and Oregon to actually approve that, because they're bordering states. Okay, so the Congress shall have the power to dispose of and make all needful rules and regulations respecting the territory or other property belonging to the United States, and nothing in this Constitution shall be so construed as to prejudice any claims of the United States or of any particular state, such as the new state that they're bringing in. So they have the ability of basically making, as far as the disposal of all the needful rules, regulations, respecting the territory or other property belonging to the United States. So in other words, they say, okay, it will cost this much money for the state to actually pay off what we paid for the, you know, like the Louisiana territory. If it was 2 cents, an acre, then they could actually come back and say, well, you need to pay us the 2 cents of acre to reimburse us for. And it is within reason to actually say, you know, you need to, you know, compensate us for, you know, the what is reasonable compensation. But they can't actually create a Hollywood out of Nebraska, right? And all of a sudden charge you for, you know, an acre, you know, the value of an acre in Hollywood or Bel Air, and, you know, say that's what you have to pay per acre of Nebraska. No, they can't do that. It's all about what they paid, and it's not a fair value to you. Because let's say eminent domain comes along. I'll give you this an example of eminent domain. If they come along and there actually needs to be a, you know, a highway, and you happen to be affected within that planning and within that route, and you don't have anything special, like your house isn't, you know, a, you know, a state treasure, city treasure, or a historical, you know, building or something like that, or deemed that way, then they can actually run you out of your house, but they have to give you fair compensation based on the market value. In other words, what you sold that house for and how much, you know, it would be worth, or what you owe on that house, one of the two. And so I honestly think that the advantage needs to go to the homeowner, but eminent domain and the way they've played with this, they've taken advantage of homeowners. And I know Bob Schultz has really won on some eminent domain issues with First Amendment petitions. And what we need to do, and this is where common law courts need to come in, because once we get common law courts reestablished, we can actually use common law courts to actually ensure that the inhabitant of that home has the ability to get what they believe is a fair market value, not an unreasonable value, but what they believe is a fair market value or compensation for what they owe. You know, if you're underwater on your house, and I'll give you an example. There's people that are underwater because they've got multiple mortgages and they've used their house as an ATM. That doesn't cut it. But if you've gone out and you've actually spent, and you have the evidence that you have spent $500,000 on home improvements, and you've paid $300,000, that's $800,000 you've sunk into that home. And even though that home couldn't sell for $800,000, you should be entitled to $800,000 for that home. And so that's where it becomes reasonable. But, you know, the government would say, oh, well, no. Anyway, I've gone down a rat hole. But this is how we have to start looking at things to make sure that we protect ourselves. It's about protecting life and our property. That's what government's supposed to be doing, not taking advantage of us. But anyway, back to this. As you understand, it finally says that there should be no, you know, and nothing in this Constitution be so construed as to prejudice any claims of the United States or any particular state. Every state has a right of its own sovereignty, to have full sovereignty over its soil, over everything that's within that state. That the federal government has no strings attached once it becomes a state. A state is a sovereign. They have no power here. Notice I said nothing that allowed the state to take away your right of owning your soil, your right of owning this, your right of owning that. In other words, if it's your land between these boundaries, it now becomes state land. You may have to pay for it, but it is yours and you are the sovereign. And the federal government cannot own any property or any buildings in there unless it's within the framework of the Constitution. That's why we have an enumerated Constitution, not a general Constitution. We'll be right back after these two messages.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process.
Folks, as you know, online fraud is on the rise, and it's more important than ever for your new and existing customers to be able to determine whether they are using a website with a secured connection. If you didn't know, Google mandated in 2017 that all data submitted to its linked websites must be secure with SSL certificates. Without SSL certificates, your site is listed by Google as not secure. In other words, without these certificates, your site will be harder to find, and this will impact new traffic and ultimately your revenue. Whether you're a blogger or in e-commerce, AdLocal will help protect your website from all forms of data breaches, phishing scams, and build a secure environment for your businesses, big or small. Contact AdLocal by calling 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com for custom pricing. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
Okay, so now that we have the layout in the Constitution that the federal government has, or the general government, has no delegated power to be able to play with the sovereignty of the state. And as a matter of fact, when they kind of came out with it, they actually started using the term equal footing. So they adopted a doctrine called equal footing doctrine regarding states coming into the union, because all of a sudden they started saying, hey, you know, some of these states you're playing with and you're not actually giving them the full sovereignty over the land that they possess, which puts them at a disadvantage that to the other states. They don't have the same full sovereignty. They don't have the same access to resources. They don't have the same controls over their soil, their water, and so forth. So anyway, this is an act for the admission of the state of Vermont into this union. And when did Vermont become a state in the union? In March 4th, 1791. Congress of the United States at the third session begun and held at the city of Philadelphia on Monday, the 6th of December, 1790, so 190, not 91. This is when they created this, and it became a state a little bit later. An act for the admission of the state of Vermont into this union. Because when they do the Enabling Act, the state still doesn't have a constitution, but this is where they basically are charged by Congress that you can become a state and how to create your constitution. The state of Vermont, having petitioned the Congress to be admitted a member of the United States, be it enacted by the Senate and House of Representatives of the United States of America in Congress assembled, and it is hereby enacted and declared that on the 4th day of March, 1791, the said state by name and style of the state of Vermont shall be received and admitted into this union as a new entire member of the United States of America. And then it basically says Frederick Augustin, Speaker of the House, John Adams, Vice President, approved February the 18th, 1791. George Washington, President, and deposited among the rolls of the Office of the Secretary of State, Thomas Jefferson. And that was it. It was very clean, but they didn't even actually, you know, give them guidance on how to create their own constitution in this one. But what you'll notice when we get to the Missouri one is they actually identify how many delegates out of the different counties in forming. And can they do that? Well, are they playing with the sovereignty of the state? No, they're not. They're not making the state, you know, at a disadvantage by telling it that it has to have and how to do that. Because sometimes states will take advantage of who controls the Constitution, and they won't do it in a Republican form of or a Republican process. They'll do it by democracy or by mob rule. And so they actually started kind of enforcing a Republican process, a representative process, so that everybody has pretty close, not in a Democratic equal say, but based on representation, each county gets an equal say on the final word. But the larger counties may have more representation, and they may be able to contribute more to the style and the framing of the Constitution by being members of different committees of creating the Constitution. But it still comes down to it has to cut the muster of all of the counties, or at least a minimum of the counties, to be able to get along, you know, move along with what needs to be done. So in creating a Constitution for the state. Here is the next one, and this is for Kentucky. An act, and Kentucky became a state when? It became a state in June 1st, 1792. So there you go, 1791, 1792. An act declaring the consent of Congress that a new state be formed within the jurisdiction of the Commonwealth of Virginia and admitted into this union by the name of the State of Virginia in Philadelphia. Congress of the United States at the third session begun and held at the city of Philadelphia on Monday, the 6th of December, 1790. So they did the same thing in 1790, but it took them over a year to get there on Kentucky side. An act declaring the consent of Congress that a new state be formed within the jurisdiction of the Commonwealth of Virginia and admitted into this union by the name of the State of Kentucky. Whereas the legislature of the Commonwealth of Virginia, by an act entitled An Act Concerning the Erection of the District of Kentucky into an Independent State, passed the 18th day. So this is what needs to be done in Washington. Washington needs to basically create an act concerning the erection of the District of whatever you want to call it, Eastern Washington, into an Independent State, close quote, past the 18th day of December, 1789, have consented that the District of Kentucky within the jurisdiction of the said Commonwealth and according to its actual boundaries at the time of passing the act aforesaid should be formed into a new state. And whereas a convention of delegates chosen by the people of the said District of Kentucky have petitioned Congress to that consent on the first day of June, 1792, the said district should be formed into a new state and received into the Union by the name of the State of Kentucky. Be it enacted that the Senate and the House of Representatives of the United States of America in Congress assembled, and it is hereby enacted and declared that the Congress doth consent that the said District of Kentucky within the jurisdiction of the Commonwealth of Virginia and according to its actual boundaries on the 8th day of December, 1789, shall upon the first day of June, 1792, be formed into a new state separate from and independent of the said Commonwealth of Virginia, and be it further enacted and declared that upon the aforesaid first day of June, 1792, the said new state, by the name and style of the state of Kentucky, shall be received and admitted into this union as a new and entire member of the United States of America. So there you go. We've got two states that become full sovereigns and entire members. And this is how it is. They created the precedence. They created the mold that there is no constraints. They hold nothing back. And actually, they didn't even charge because this was land that was already a part of the state of Virginia. Now, I believe if you look, the state of Virginia went westward to possibly the Mississippi River or some river boundary to where they said that's too far. We don't have enough people, you know, settling beyond that. So this is where we're going to create the state boundary for Virginia. Anyway, they have all the signatures from the vice president and so forth, and that's what they did. Now, the Tennessee statehood in 1796, and it kind of gives you the idea of June 1st, 1796 is when they were actually when they became a state. And this actually has the chapter Roman numeral XLVIL, which I'm not going to hurt my head and tell you what that year is or what that chapter is, an act for the admission of the state of Tennessee into the Union. Whereas by the acceptance of the deed of secession of the state of North Carolina, Congress are bound to lay out into one or more states the territory thereby seceded to the United States. Be it enacted by the Senate and the House of Representatives of the United States of America in Congress assembled, that the whole of the territory ceded to the United States by the state of North Carolina shall be one state, and that the same is hereby declared to be one of the United States of America on an equal footing with the original states, in all respects whatever, by the name and title of the state of Tennessee, that until the next general census, the said state of Tennessee shall be entitled to one representative in the House of Representatives of the United States and other respects as far as may be applicable, the laws of the United States shall extend to and have force in the state of Tennessee in the same manner as if that state had originally been one of the United States. And so there you go. Another precedence. They keep on saying that it's just as if they were a part of the United States. And so there's nothing in the Constitution to allow them to change this, to actually take away the full sovereignty of a state possessing and controlling every whit of its resources within its boundary, other than those needful buildings and or land that is enumerated in the Constitution, like a port of entry, you know, to create a mechanism for ensuring the goods that are coming in and the people that are coming in are fully accounted for by the federal government because they have that responsibility. Okay, so now we hit 1803, and this is when Jefferson is president. And this is the transcript of the Enabling Act for the state of Ohio, which became a state March 1st, 1803. Now, see, we're kind of flying through this, and I got 30 seconds left, and I don't have enough time. The whole point of the reason I'm going to actually bore you over Ohio and Louisiana and Indiana and then go into Missouri, I'm going to start showing you that they start changing and drifting their words. Why didn't they keep the exact same words from one state to the next? Why did they allow modifications or style changes to these enabling acts? This is what happens. And this is where I call it urination because, you know, everybody wants to make their own mark on how to do something and they want to change it to make it better. Sometimes changing to make it better actually doesn't make it better. And we'll get more into the enabling acts in our next episode. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the Republic and we need your help. God bless.
Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.